This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. If you want to become a patron, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And this one, this show, I'm hoping to do more of these in the future where we kind of just deal with some recent news articles and stuff relating to, you know, the type of subjects we cover here on Where Did the Road Go? And tonight I'm joined by Timothy Renner.
Hello.
Melissa Martel.
Hello.
And Ren Collier.
Hey, everyone.
So, right off the bat, we're recording this on Black Friday. And as far as I know, I didn't see anything about people killing each other today.
I saw something where they open the door and one guy walked through. That's it.
Huh.
No, nothing.
So yeah, maybe that's a good sign. I mean, years ago, they had people shooting each other for PlayStation 2s or 3s. I think it was a PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I stayed at home and did things around the house and ate leftovers.
And I noticed there were stores opening at like 5 o'clock. I'm not a big holiday person. In fact, I kind of hate holidays. But opening your store at 5 o'clock on Thanksgiving just seems like a dick move, you know?
Yeah, and I've heard, I think it was an NPR story where they said there's been a bit of a backlash against that this year. They were saying that they expect that, for instance, the busiest time to be noon on Black Friday instead of like, you know, 7 a.m. or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The people are getting more relaxed, it sounds like.
So nobody was coming out in tents.
I was going to say that. I mean, if I owned a retail store like that, I'd be like, hey, sleep in. Our Black Friday starts at noon, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not like the good deals are going to, it's not like they're not selling this stuff. So what's the point of opening up earlier than everyone else? Because if it's a good deal, people are going to want it no matter what. All this stuff sells out.
Yeah, and it's so transparent anyway. I mean, they're just trying to get rid of stock before the new year. I mean,
yeah,
that's why I don't even bother with it. And that too, I can't imagine what it's like to have to be a worker on Black Friday or even having to work like on Thanksgiving or something. I haven't had to work in Thanksgiving in a while just because of my job. And, you know, I try not to support any stores that are open on holidays because I'm like, you need to let these people just go home.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said,
I just have I don't do crowds. If there's going to be some insane crowd to shopping, it's just not worth it for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I typically don't even go to the grocery store until it's about to close anyway, just to avoid huge crowds.
The grocery stores we have here are 24 hours, so I usually go at like 2 in the morning.
That's the best time.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Or like after my radio show, after the last exit ends at 6 a.m., where, you know, people are just starting to filter in, but it's not bad at all.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, now we get to get, you know, slammed by holiday stuff for the next month for Christmas. Not that we haven't already been slammed by Christmas stuff for almost a month.
Yeah,
I'm not looking forward to working at a store because I just got a job doing sampling of foods. I'm not looking forward to hearing Christmas music for 7 hours for 5 days a week in the background.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised my girlfriend didn't already have the Christmas tree up today, but I think I managed to hold it off for a little while.
And there's an asteroid passing right by the Earth like a week before Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Anyone else see this article?
I missed that one.
And how far away?
Closer than they're totally comfortable with. But not necessarily dangerous. It's a weird asteroid. There's a meteor shower that's coming up. Like the 10th, I think it starts. Let's see if I can find it. It was trending on Facebook. It was.
Yeah, I keep imagining if an asteroid or something is actually going to hit Earth, it's going to be something that no one caught or no one saw coming.
Probably. Or they just won't tell us about it.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest sort of like outer space thing I even worry about, it's not even asteroids, but like just like a star nearby going supernova or getting caught in like a pulsar wake or something.
Yep.
You know, things like that I feel like are much more dangerous than an asteroid because those things could, you know, full on just strip the atmosphere off the planet. And
mm-hmm.
that's way more game over than a nuclear winter.
Potentially hazardous 3-mile wide asteroid to skim Earth just days before Christmas. Diameter of 3 miles, the asteroid named 32,000 Phaethon, or Phaethon, after the Greek demigod who, according to legend, nearly set the Earth on fire, is classified as a potentially hazardous object by the Minor Planet Center. It's unlikely to destroy our planet. It'll pass within 6.5 million miles of Earth, which is relatively close in space terms, but still around 27 times the distance of the moon.
It's Nibiru.
Yeah.
100%. This is Planet X. Everyone get ready.
I mean it this time, guys. It's Nibiru.
Yeah. I just want everyone to know that I'm selling dehydrated food buckets, and you need to stock up for Christmas, just in case.
It says that they're going to use the opportunity to make a 3D model of it because it kind of falls between an asteroid and a comet because it seems to give off what does it say here, as they call it, skirts of activity as it spins. So they're not totally sure what's going on with it. It said it will be potentially detectable for 3 weeks, but it'll be the brightest between December 11th and the 21st. Oh, it's part. They think it's part of the Geminid meteor shower. They think it's one of the things that brings it.
Or, you know, the new star of Bethlehem.
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, yeah, I got to give it the Messianic spin. I'm sure some people will.
So that's happening. But, you know, that's to me, I feel like that should be a bigger story than it is. But, you know, like, no one really follows that stuff up.
Well, I was blown away. I mean, recently speaking of asteroids and stuff, I mean, did you see the news article about the extrasolar asteroid that made the flyby on the sun?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that was really interesting.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't see a whole lot of people talking about it. But when you saw the pictures of it, I just instantly thought like Rendezvous with Rama because it was like, you know, it wasn't even shaped like a rock. It was like long and cylindrical, and NASA was super careful just to say that it was rocky. It didn't look artificial at all. And I was sort of like, huh, it's very interesting. It had a very, very set course, and it kind of did the flyby and flew back off. And I'm like, if we're going to run into some sort of probe, that's exactly how it's going to behave.
Yeah. Yeah. And they said it looked very, very old, I think, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe because it's been traveling for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fascinating. They said it's not coming near Earth, unfortunately, but they're going to try and analyze the hell out of it while they have it. There was also, a couple weeks ago, the new chamber found in the Great Pyramid. The Void, as they're calling it. They have stumbled upon a 30-meter-long space hidden within its limestone and granite walls. They hope, of course, that it'll help them understand how it was built.
They used cosmic rays to find it, which I was very disappointed because here we have cosmic rays, and I'm not being given the powers of the Fantastic Four because that is, of course, how they got their powers. So,
well, there's still time. You never know.
Right. I would like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be the fire guy or the stretchy guy.
but it's, you know, what does it say here? They hope the published research will spark a scientific debate about why the Void exists and what might be inside. He dismisses any theories that the space contains another grand gallery or burial chamber. But, of course, there are no burial chambers in the Great Pyramid.
Nope.
So, you know, that's sort of that dogma stuck in right there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, let's iterate that. There have never been any burial chambers found in the Great Pyramid.
Yes, there have never been mummies. There have never been coffins. In fact, most of the pyramids in Egypt don't appear to be burial sites. Almost none of them have mummies in them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of stick to the idea that they're ritual spaces. They're temples. They're meant to, you know, the walls are covered with incantations and spells. And I know in Gordon White's Starships, he talks a lot about this, about how there was this whole process for a new king to kind of go through the pyramid, like piece by piece, do the different rituals and spells that were, you know, engraved on the walls. And the sarcophagus that are present are more like a ritual sarcophagus. Like they undergo sort of a ritual death and rebirth, kind of mirroring the myth of Osiris. But they weren't buried there. It wasn't a tomb. Not a lot of people realize that, you know, that's how thick that propaganda is. People still think the pyramids were places where kings were buried.
I think it's a pop culture kind of thing that's we've been fed that, you know, since Scooby-Doo or whatever, you know, when we were kids. And it's
what was that, Melissa?
Oh, I was just saying they're more ceremonial than a place for permanent burial. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're more like a place where a ritual would be done, like a ritual space, rather than, you know, a burial ground.
For some reason, when we talk, it drowns Melissa out. That's why I'm trying to kind of pay attention if I hear a noise from her end.
I'm just reading here that they think that pretty much it's a pretty basic. It's just a leftover from the construction that they might have used it in transporting blocks or whatnot, and it just got filled in, you know, over time when they were done with it.
Possibly, but there's nothing in that pyramid that's accidental. You know, everything is so deliberate. I would be really surprised if there's a void that big that was just coincidental.
Yeah, of course they're going to come up with the most logical, mundane explanation. But I guess that's their nature as, you know, scientists.
I mean, there's openings in the Sphinx, too. And there's actually photographs of them walking, climbing down the ladder into the Sphinx. You don't know anything about that. They've never talked about it.
It'll be really interesting to see if there are new inscriptions or new engravings kind of filling in any sort of missing gaps and what was maybe not present so far that we found in the pyramid itself.
Well, there's no engravings in the pyramid.
Well, I mean, like the hieroglyphics and stuff. Like
there aren't any.
I thought there was like writings of different spells and rituals on the walls.
Not in the Great Pyramid, no. Not in the Great Pyramid. The three pyramids of Giza have absolutely no hieroglyphics or anything in them. The only place that there's anything is above the relieving chamber. There are a few marks that are drawn that have been somewhat proven to be fake.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to Bruce Rucks on Tim Banal's show, and he was talking about how there was like Trojan writing or sort of like Greek writing in some of the pyramids. But I just
might be.
I didn't know enough about that to sort of say whether or not that was true or not.
Well, the guy who broke into the upper relieving chamber, I had on, can't remember his name now, but probably about a year ago, he wrote the book on how if you know he like did detailed analysis of these markings above the relieving chamber and showed that most, if not all of them, were probably put in place when they opened these relieving chambers, thinking they were going to find out for sure that this was Khufu's pyramid.
Gotcha.
And when they didn't find anything, then they put stuff in there to make it look right. And he presents a pretty good amount of evidence that that's the case.
Isn't it like Khufu's like misspelled or something?
Yes. Yeah. But he also shows, you know, because like when Graham Hancock looked, he said, oh, well, you know, you could see how these things move underneath the blocks. So they had to have been put on the blocks before they were put in place. Mm. But he's showing, no, you can see the paint running down from the top of one block onto the one underneath it, which means they were painted when they were there.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to say, I wonder what Graham Hancock's interpretation of this void would be. It would be interesting to hear what he thinks about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything on him talking about it.
Probably too recent.
Yeah, but you think he would have said something.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, he might have a reference with his own research for something similar.
But let's see. Yeah, I don't see anything where he's talking about it.
I mean, I don't think I don't think any official Egyptologist is going to get his opinion, so we won't see it on anything official. But maybe get a blog somewhere.
Well, there's GrahamHancock.com, but I just did a Google search and I didn't see anything for it.
On Twitter.
And I'm trying to. Scott Crichton is the guy who wrote the book that I was thinking of. So that was a very well done book. It's funny because Zachariah Sitchin was the first one to say that those marks were fake, and it turns out that the stuff Zachariah was basing that on was completely nonsensical. And so Crichton goes through and goes, "Nope, Zachariah was wrong about the you know how he's proving they're fake, but it turns out they're probably fake."
I actually found something on his Twitter.
Oh, what's it say?
Well, he links an article that says Egypt archaeologist criticizes pyramid void discovery. And his comment is, why am I not surprised by this attempt by Egyptological hierarchy to pour cold water on an intriguing find? So I click the link. And an Egyptian archaeologist overseeing a project to scan the pyramids for voids on Saturday criticized the announcement of a discovery of a passenger plane-sized cavity in the Great Pyramid. Scientists with the Scan Pyramids project revealed on Thursday that the void discovered with subatomic particle scans was the first major structure found inside the pyramid since the 19th century, and it is thought to be at least 30 meters long, 50 meters long, 9 meters high, which links Khufu's burial chamber at the pyramid center to the tunnel leading outside. The findings were published by Science Journal Nature, but Zahi Hawass, who heads the Scan Pyramids Science Committee overseeing the project, said there was no new discovery.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, yeah. You can't really trust anything that comes out of Hawass's mouth anyway, so.
Yeah.
Tim, anything to add?
Well, he's obviously denying it because there's a UFO in there.
No.
That was the hangar bay. That's where they landed. So,
yeah, I guess Graham Hancock's taking the position that, of course, they're going to downplay it, that it's nothing new when it's actually something. So he's onto it.
But Ren's right. He has had a history of kind of taking the head guy over there in Egypt. He has had a history of doing stuff like this, hasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hawass has been very sketchy.
Yeah, so Hawass still even in charge, though? I mean, like...
No, that's why I'm... But he's even when he got ousted, he still has his fingers in this stuff.
That's really odd.
Yeah, I'm sure people go to him for references or to get his opinion.
Yeah.
He's, you know, involved previous.
Hawass is an interesting character, too, if people listening aren't familiar with him. Especially the fact that he was, like, he studied in America on a scholarship that was provided by like the estate of Edgar Cayce, and there's sort of this idea that perhaps they had a deal with him, you know, that any sort of discoveries would be filtered through them before they went out public and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of backroom dealings going on with him.
Cayce figures in a lot of this stuff. I mean, that whole group that runs whatever it's called, the Cayce Foundation, has really done everything they can to see whether or not there is that chamber under the Sphinx that he predicted. And there is a chamber under the Sphinx. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. We may never see what's in it.
Yeah.
Well, I know they don't plan to go and do anything with that void and just leave it closed. They said they're not going to go into it and go in the structure. I think that's what it said in this article anyways.
Yeah. I think unless they can find a way into it, they're not going to drill or anything and compromise the structure.
And the article said that using those cosmic rays, they actually get a pretty good picture of what's in there. And it does seem to be just a void, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if it had scrolls or something in there, it may not show up. Or if there's stuff written on the walls or anything like that. Yeah. All right. So there's also let's talk about Bigfoot for a moment. So Adam had posted this great picture of a woman. Why don't you describe this, Tim?
Well, it was
you're the Bigfoot guy.
It was a headshot, which if it had been real, would have been a world-changing best headshot ever, best photograph since the Patterson-Gimlin footage. Amazing world-changing photograph. And it was taken supposedly by a girl who was doing her homework. Now, we didn't get to hear from the girl. This was a fellow on YouTube who was relating the story. The girl had apparently sent the picture to him. She was doing her homework. The Bigfoot walked into her house. She had the wherewithal to take a picture before she ran out the front door, she said. Bearded humanoid, long hair, long beard, wide nose. At first, I went right to the Andre the Giant from the $6 Million Man because I thought, oh, maybe that's what it was. But the it doesn't look dissimilar to that. The nose was pretty wide, but then a little bit more searching, we found that it was the statue of Bigfoot that Lauren Coleman has in his Museum of Cryptozoology, which I believe is in Maine now.
Like, they don't even get points for trying on that one.
I think the guy, and I think it's a fellow who posts Bigfoot stuff pretty regularly. I don't know if he's just trying to get YouTube hits or what, but it took me, and I was surprised it took me as long as 5 minutes to find it. I thought I'd find it in about two. I thought I'd seen it in a movie before. I started looking through Bigfoot movie stills, and then I was like, no, that wasn't it. And then I just stumbled on it, you know, in a Google image search.
I always struggle to try and understand why the mentality behind people and why they I never get it. I never get what they get out of doing that.
Yeah,
making fake stuff.
Fake stuff and pretend, like why is it that they don't think anyone's going to figure it out? Like, what are they thinking? Like, I just never get it. I try to get in your mind and go, why? But I never get it.
There's definitely a certain personality who likes to see if they can get one over on people. I don't know if that's the case with this one or not, but there's definitely certain people who, that fellow, that Rick Dyer guy who did the supposedly killed one and had it in his freezer. He comes back every couple years and claims he shot another one and stuff. And there's a certain percentage of people who believe him. And every time he just laughs, you know, he's like, I told you idiots, I'd be back and do it again. You know, I told you from the beginning, I was going to hoax you again. And every,
it's like, but where or what?
Oh. I mean, we forget too, especially on sites like YouTube, there's like a monetary incentive to get as many subscribers or views or likes or whatever as you can.
Exactly.
And I mean, in this case, this video has 52,000 views, 214 likes. So it's like, you know, there are people watching it. And so, you know, you get that content out there, you monetize it. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, as long as you.
Yeah. Right. Well, Bigfoot encounters are huge because we don't have a lot of information, let's be honest. And the best information we do have is from witness encounters. So I think that's why a show like Sasquatch Chronicles, which I believe has legitimate witnesses on, does so well, because people are really just eager for this information, for these witness encounters. But there are several YouTube channels that just read encounters. They'll just read, like, here's somebody sent me this encounter, and of course they provide no other, you know, references. They'll just say, you know, this is from Kentucky and this person wrote me, and they'll read their encounter, usually with scary music playing behind it or something. And you have to wonder, it's like, is this legit, or is this just, you know, you going for YouTube hits? And then of course they'll say, no, this is, you know, these are real. But, you know, it's kind of hard to say. And I do think,
and that's why.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's a competitive industry, so I guess you gotta, you know, come up with the latest kaboom, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and that drive kind of muddies the water for the whole people who actually want to take this stuff seriously, too, as well. You know, that's why Bigfoot stuff is generally considered just bunk or a laughing stock amongst any serious researchers.
Yeah. Well, the same thing happens with UFO research. Well, any of this research, you just got so much nonsense thrown in there.
Yeah, to the point where you wonder if that's not part of the point. You know, people will suggest that.
Yeah.
That is, you know, somewhere somebody is just throwing the most ridiculous stuff out there to make everyone else look crazy. And at some points,
what were you going to say? Go on.
And I guess some people are just willing to, they just really want to believe no matter what, even if they have to fake it and convince themselves, like they just really want to believe that they've got something and they've got the next thing and they're, you know, special. In
yeah,
way.
That happens.
I do think there's a disinfo thing going on though, that where they want to throw out information to make this stuff look more ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, like, you just throw the most ridiculous thing out there, and then, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, look, these people believe blank, you know, and you know, where it really doesn't apply, but, you know.
Well, that's like, you know, when I tell people I do a show, I hate to use the word paranormal anymore, because it's such a poisoned term. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. You know, it's like, are we post-paranormal? Nope, that just sounds
yeah.
I'm looking for not right, you know, like arrogant. And it's like, no, it's not that. It's just that paranormal has all this baggage with it. You know, you say, well, we do a show on the paranormal, and someone goes, so do you believe in aliens? It's like, well, yes, but I don't think it has anything to do with the UFO. You know, yeah. it's with UFOs, and then you're like, oh, now this is going to be like a 2-hour conversation for me to even bring you up to speed on what I mean by that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole thing. It's like somebody's like, well, you believe in Bigfoot? I'm like, well, wait, was step back? You know, like, I believe in something, but that's try to, you know, put some boundaries on what that is. And it's, again, it's a
2-hour conversation. You have Native Americans citing these things. You have cultures all over the world that have seen these things. You have modern sightings of these things. These people are seeing something. That doesn't mean it's an undiscovered ape. It doesn't mean it's a missing link. I have no idea what just noise that just was. So, I mean, it's to say you believe in something, it's not really the right question. You know, I mean, there's enough evidence out there to say these people are witnessing something and encountering something. It doesn't define what it is. The same with ghosts, the same with UFOs and all this stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, some level, I mean, like topics like the paranormal are sort of more popular today than they've ever been. I mean, you have a lot of movies about exorcisms and ghosts and haunted objects.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the topic is very popular, but it's like a certain interpretation of the topic.
Yeah.
Like a pop culture interpretation of the topic. And once you start to stray away from that, I think like you start to lose people.
Yeah. Yes and no. I find that some of the podcasts, the fictional podcasts I listen to, are able to do that because they're not being restrained by, you know, whatever company they're working for or by what they can create because they're only audio. Like I've mentioned this before, like the podcast Tannis is so subtle in what they're doing. It's almost like they're unintentionally describing how we're looking at the paranormal, but they've named it something else and have given it some semblance of a definition. But again, they're just getting this like shape of it. And I'm thinking that's kind of what we're doing with the way that we approach this stuff, where we're getting a shape, but we can't tell you what it is. We can't easily define it.
Like in some ways, like you see people jump to certain conclusions when they see the material mixed. Like one of my friends directed the remake of The Blair Witch Project. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it was pretty not good.
Yeah. And at the end of it, you know, there's, I don't want to spoil anything for people, so spoilers ahead, even though it's not really that big of a spoiler. But at near the end, there's a segment where they're in this house, and sort of this light descends from outside and like filters in and everything. And it's very sort of like UFO-esque.
Uh-huh.
And immediately, like if you go to YouTube, like there are all these comments like, oh, well, was it the Blair Witch a gray alien? Or like, is she really an alien? Was it UFOs or whatever? And it's like, well, maybe that's not the first thing you should jump to. Maybe, you know, maybe it's just a weird light. You know, why does it have to immediately be this one thing or another thing? And
Yeah.
I think that's people want things tied up and put into a box with a nice bow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing I think we run into with a lot of things we talk about on this show and a lot of the things we talk about in private is that the more you study this sort of thing, the more you realize that it's almost impossible to put any of this into a nice box and put a little bow on it because the phenomena leak into each other. And, you know, it may seem like it's one thing on the outside, but when put into context, it's something completely different.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with someone this week via text conversation. This person wanted to come on Strange Familiars. They run a ghost investigation group. So I said, okay, well, you know, trying to do a little bit of pre-interview. And I said, you know, we really try to work with stories on the show. So rather than just, you know, I want to interview you and you tell me about ghost research. I said, I'd rather like kind of hear some of your stories. So what's the kind of weirdest or scariest thing that you've run into? And she came back and said, well, I ran into a demon on the last investigation. And I said, well, how do you know it was a demon? And her answer was longer than this, but it sort of boiled down to because it was. And I realized that not to pat ourselves on the back on this show, but it's so much more. It's more nuanced and it's more complex than that. And I tried to say, like, well, demon is such a loaded word, you're going to have to kind of define what you mean. She's like, no, it's people all over the world experience these same things and they have different names for them, but they're all demons. And I said, well, that's really oversimplifying things. I mean, you know, but we kind of ended on that, but I just realized that, you know, like you said, we can't call ourselves post-paranormal. I think Ren jokingly referred to us as alt-paranormal. But
alt well, paranormal.
Let's not be alt.
yeah.
But whatever it is, it's looking at this in a more, you know, comprehensive and nuanced way, or at least through a different lens. I think a broader lens, and it's really hard to snap people out of that. Like you could tell it for her. There were ghosts and there were demons, and that was pretty much it. You know.
But yet, we have a decent number of people listening to this show who don't want that, who want that broader perspective, who want to, you know, who are open-minded enough to kind of look at this stuff differently. And that's really encouraging to me because I didn't know that would be there when I started this show.
Yeah, well, I think there's a huge percentage of people who are into this, who are ready to be open-minded, you know, who are ready to think about things these ways. And I think that's why we get, and again, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I see the compliments come in on the Facebook page for Where Did the Road Go and stuff. And there are certain people that really appreciate it.
Well, you know, the one thing that I notice is like what usually happens is you'll get a topic or a movie and it will be really general and it will be that kind of black and white, really simplistic version. And you, it helps whatever you're doing, draw people in. And then, you know, the people who are just, you know, simplistic about it will leave, but people who are more interested will start searching for more. So you can get new people, but the people who are really invested will start searching for shows like this. They'll ask the questions, the ones you really want to engage with you. But so these sort of like Blair Witch or really simplistic stuff, I mean, they look bad, but yet they draw people in and can, you know, ignite the attention to it. And then you end up, you know, you'll get people eventually, a smaller group of people who get more into it and more invested.
Agreed. Yep. That's why I think some of the shows like Ancient Aliens and stuff, I mean, they can be entertaining at times, but I think overall it's a good thing that they're popular because it makes it more okay for people to talk about this stuff and more okay for people to go looking deeper. I mean, I would listen to shows like Coast to Coast, you know, I would listen to Coast to Coast and they'd have someone on and I'd be like, why aren't you asking them about this? They just said something really interesting. Why are you not following that up? You know? And that's part of why I wanted to do the show, because I wanted to talk to these people and follow up what they just said.
Yeah.
But let's see. Let's move on to our I think everyone's favorite story, the flat earther to launch self in rocket made of scrap in a bid to prove theory.
Yeah, this dude absolutely rules. He's my hero. And he's a true carny from like, I don't, the coolest part of the story to me is that he holds a world record for limousine jumping, which is, that should tell you about everything you need to know for this guy. Like the fact that like, so like, he's not really a flat earth guy. I mean, let's get that out. His whole thing is he wanted to build this rocket. He started a Kickstarter or GoFundMe or something for it. He got like $300 out of his like, you know, like $6,000 goal or whatever. So then he saw the flat earth people and he's like, And so then all of a sudden he's a flat earth guy and he just gets the money, just starts pouring in because there are plenty of gullible people nowadays who want to pay people to do stuff like this. So just like number one grifter of 2017, he's my favorite guy. I love this guy and I wish him the best of luck in his steam rocket saying, adventure.
Are you saying he's a pseudo flat earther?
I think he... Well, see, I don't. I think he is a guy who smells money and knows how to convince people to give it to him, which is like the truest carny lifestyle.
He's an alt flat earther.
Yeah. I have a special place in my heart for grifters. I love guys like this, and just like I just wish him the best of luck. So I really hope he doesn't get killed.
He knows an opportunity. Sees it.
Exactly.
There you go.
And
what exactly is he doing? Like, how is he doing? Like, how is he flying this? Like, what is his parameters? Like, how is he going to prove that the Earth is flat with this rocket?
I think his idea, it's like a steam-powered rocket, which is funny enough to begin with. And apparently he's going to fly up and, like, take a picture and, like, prove that there's no curvature or whatever. We've seen some similar things from this, from people like this in the past, where I think one guy did some GPS thing with his laptop while he was on a flight.
This
proves the Earth is flat or whatever. There's been a lot of different things like this going on, but this guy has the true go-getter sort of, you know, motivation that I really like in people.
And he's definitely gotten the exposure for it as well. And his name is Michael Hughes, which just amuses me.
Is there any chance that this guy gets shut down for safety reasons? And then, of course, the flat earth people will say, well, they didn't want him to do it because they didn't want him to expose the truth.
He would find out the truth, yeah.
And then he keeps the money.
Exactly. That's the key point.
Then there are stories like this one, which, you know, is the type of things you see over and over and kind of causes this stuff to lose any kind of sensibility, is the unusual encounter. Ghost hunter claims he saw two spirits having sex in museum toilets.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yes, this is the story you need to run. They're, you know, it's like ghosts and sex. Let's run. It'll make people laugh at these people, you know?
What publication wrote that? Like, was it like The Sun or something? Like, who wrote that article?
The IB Times.
Oh, yeah.
Times.
Yeah, it's another. I think that's another British, like, tabloid publication. Yeah.
It looks like it's based out of India, but it's probably British. 38-year-old said that the ghost assaulted him once. The paranormal enthusiast has kept a record of his encounters and will soon describe each one of them in detail. In his revelations, he said he was a kid when he had his first paranormal encounter. There was another one. Oh, okay. So this was just, it's not even like he just had this. It was just one of his encounters, and the screen just went away and I can't seem to get it back. There it is. There was another one. There was another one where I saw two people having a sexual encounter in a toilet at a museum in East Kirkby. I went to open the door to tell them to stop, and they just vanished. I headed out onto the airfield, but there was no one there. My family had been waiting outside the toilet, and they said they hadn't seen anyone go in or out. So basically, this is just a guy who had a bunch of encounters, and this article zoomed in on this one about people having sex and then used that as their main headline.
Well, it's pretty catchy.
It is. It's very sexy. You know? It gets the clicks.
Yeah. I'm almost speechless. I don't know what to say.
So now, Tim, you were also saying that there was a Bigfoot convention just recently that there was some controversy over?
Yeah, and I'm going to let me preface this by saying I only know Bob Gimlin's side of the story by hearing him talk about it on another podcast. So I do not have both sides of the story. Okay. But in a way, you kind of only need to know Bob's side of the story, I think. But so there was a big convention or some sort of, you know, festival or something celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage, which the Patterson-Gimlin footage is the very famous film from the late 60s where you see what many people think is a creature walk across a creek and turns, looks at the camera, and proceeds off into the woods. It's the most famous footage of Bigfoot ever taken, if it shows a Bigfoot. There's a lot of arguments, of course. You'll get arguments on both sides, people who claim that, you know, it can't be a man in a suit because they didn't have the technology to make suits that good at the time.
Right.
And the proportions don't match up to human. I happen to fall on that side of it. I don't think it's a man in a suit, but there are a lot of people who argue otherwise, that it's just a guy in a suit. So,
right.
You know, there's definitely two sides of that coin, but it's generally considered to be the best footage, period, of Bigfoot ever taken. So they're having this 50th anniversary celebration. They invite Bob Gimlin to the celebration. And he is supposed to speak there. Now, there was some sort of controversy going on where they accused Bob's manager of taking advantage of him, I believe. He was, they started some kind of thing on, I think it was on Twitter, about Free Bob. Basically, this guy was taking advantage of him. Bob Gimlin has come out and said, they sort of implied that Bob was senile, I think. Bob's in his 80s now. He seems to have all his faculties. He's very active. He goes to all these different conventions. And I think he was saying something on the podcast that he just still does like wagon train reenactments and stuff where he, you know, he's out there riding horses and sleeping in the wilds and so forth. So he seems to be pretty with it. And this just wasn't the case. It ended up where they didn't even let Bob speak at this event. Now, he's Roger Patterson died in the 70s, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
So Bob Gimlin's really the living link to this film, and they didn't even let him speak there. They just kind of bulldozed him out of the place and didn't get a chance to speak. A big controversy.
This doesn't make any sense.
In what way?
Well, I mean, if they think he's being victimized, their treatment of him just doesn't make any sense.
Like, yeah, there's some other weird stuff too, because I think the people that were organizing the festival used to be his manager. So, yeah, there's some, and again, I'm not 100% sure on that fact, but it seems like they were at least involved in helping.
That makes
sense. Yeah, in helping Bob in the past. So it's been a very big controversy that I know Bob Gimlin's been on Sasquatch Chronicles, I think, two different times talking about it. Now he was very upset, very hurt, you know, by it, because, you know, I think for years he wouldn't talk about anything. He never said it wasn't, you know, it was fake or anything. He always stuck to his guns, said it was real, what they saw was real. But he got so tired of defending it that for years and years he wouldn't speak in public about it. And in recent years, he's kind of come back and he does a whole festival circuit, I think, every year. So I think he seemed to be really hurt by it, is what it was. And whatever the full story is, I just think it's a shame that he wouldn't have gotten to speak on the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. It seems like anytime this stuff breaks off into groups, and I'm sure Greg Bishop and Jeff Ritzman could speak more to this, but it seems like it just ends up not really achieving much of anything after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of just infighting and stuff like that in, and I know it's the same just from talking to Jeff. I'm not intimately familiar, but I know we've had like, oh yeah, same thing, you know, kind of thing. I know he said it's like very much like that in the UFO world. Very similar. Yeah.
Well, you have infighting in the groups themselves, and then all the different fields kind of think the other ones are ridiculous. The Bigfoot people think the UFO people are ridiculous. The UFO people think the ghost people are ridiculous, etc.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I tend to think, like, I understand where, at least on some level, people might be worried that Bob is being manipulated or he's being used by this guy. But, I mean, like you said, I've heard Bob Dylan speak. He seems to have all of his faculties. It doesn't seem like a guy who is being manipulated at all. And so, yeah, I just found it, I thought it was really disappointing that they sort of shut him out of an event that celebrating something that he did.
Yeah.
That he was part of.
I mean, honestly, if they really did think that he was being manipulated, there's better ways to deal with it. Like, what would that do? Not allow him to speak? Would that help him not be manipulated? Probably not. There's probably better avenues or things they could have done if they were really concerned and it was real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rather than, you know, boot him off the stage or not even let him get on the stage.
Yeah, that's what it was. I don't think they even let him near the stage.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, there's this article that's fairly interesting, actually. Airliners and F-15s involved in bizarre encounter with mystery aircraft over Oregon.
Oh, that's near me. West Coast.
Let's see. This was, what was the date on this? November 15th. Basically, let me see if I can get to, it's a fairly long article. It says the first inklings of the story came to me shortly after the incident occurred from friends of mine in the aviation world. Sparse on details at the time, it sounded like it was probably just another one of the often misconstrued incidents that happen in the skies around the U.S. every day. Ones where aircraft with inoperable radios or transponders stray into areas they shouldn't. And sometimes these occurrences result in local fighter jets paying the wayward aircraft a visit in the direction of NORAD. But days after initially blowing off the incident, it later began to seem that there was indeed more to this story than had been reported. And they said, there was actually a Reddit thread starting this off saying, just landed in Seattle coming from the Bay Area. Beginning over southern Oregon, we kept overhearing Seattle Center attempting to track an airplane with no responder who wasn't talking. A handful of crews were able to track it visually. Best they could tell, it was between 35,000 and 37,000 feet northbound. Nobody close enough to see the type. Last we heard, it was over the Willamette Valley northbound, and some fighters, perhaps out of PDX, were scrambled to go take a peek. Center had trouble tracking it on primary radar. Then he said, strange. My theory is they were running drugs into Canada. Then it says, update. The gentleman I spoke with said they initially got alerted to the aircraft from Oakland Center, who was painting it on primary, basically illuminating it with radar, but without transponder information. For whatever reason, they couldn't track it themselves on primary. And that's when I overheard the aircraft, overheard them using airline aircraft to track it visually. The last airplane to see it had it descended to Portland and had to descend into Portland and lost sight of it. The fighters were scrambled out of PDX, but flew around for a while and didn't find it. But there are actually air traffic recordings of them talking about this and trying to find this mysterious thing that didn't have anything on it. It says the audio is fantastic as it illustrates that there were many communications between various jet crews and Seattle Center whose controllers tried to track the aircraft as it made its way north toward the Willamette Valley. The aircraft was not able to be tracked on radar, nor did it show up on the crew's digital traffic collision avoidance systems, but it was clearly there, although never quite close enough to positively identify exactly what type it was. So, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's not like it's a thing that hasn't happened before, but it shows that it still is happening. So you run to... Some people will run right to spaceship, but I mean, it could be just something else anomalous in the sky. I mean, we've had them throughout our history, and it could be, it could have been a top secret craft too. Just because, you know, NORAD is scrambling jets doesn't mean anyone told them what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the materialist part of me wants to say immediately, like, I think it's probably closer to the original idea that it was something running drugs, because we've known that the cartels especially use drones to run drugs over the border. They have for a while now, and it's a popular way to get things across. But the speed it was going at seems to be odd for a drone, because most drones are not going to have that kind of propulsion. But then sort of the UFO buff side of me saw that they ID'd it around Mount Shasta, which, if people are familiar with Mount Shasta, know that there are plenty of stories that revolve around Mount Shasta and strange lights seen in the sky around it and that area. So I don't know. It's a very strange story. I mean, like, the Mount Shasta connection is kind of what piques my UFO interest.
For me, it was that it just stayed just out of sight. It was just far enough away where they couldn't quite see exactly what it was. That sounds like so much in the paranormal world.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just right there. You can see it, but you can't quite make it out. You can't quite get a fix on it.
Yeah, how did they ID that it was an aircraft? Because, I mean, they got radar signal on it, but, I mean, you know, radar just works by bouncing a signal off of something. It doesn't mean that it's an aircraft. It just means that it's something in the air.
Well,
did
I think
they actually visually identify it?
No, I think they assumed it was an aircraft, because what else would it be? And yeah, only one of them could pick it up on radar. The other one couldn't, which is odd, too. And they said they could see there was an object there, but they couldn't see what it was because they couldn't get close enough. And then the jets couldn't find it at all.
So it just vanished.
Yep.
Or did it go into the hollow earth under Mount Shasta?
Let's hope.
It went to the void in that pyramid.
Yeah, it was a Lemurian. It was a Lemurian fighter ship.
Yeah, Mount Shasta has so much weird history to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole idea that, you know, Mount Shasta is hollow, and within it there's, you know, this Lemurian Atlantean civilization, and there's all kinds of weirdo hollow earth stories. There's Bigfoot sightings all the time in the Mount Shasta area. People see strange lights in the sky on Mount Shasta. I mean, it's considered in occult circles to be a holy mountain itself, yeah. You know, that, like, there are all kinds of occulty stories that revolve around Mount Shasta.
Yes, yeah, and there's a lot of Bigfoot stories about Mount Shasta, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there's certain areas where people who, you know, are into the paranormal or UFOs, they believe that, you know, there's areas these sightings happen because there's something, you know, created there where, you know, people see a phenomenon that, you know, they almost project, or that they, you know, would want to see. So everybody's seeing something different in certain areas, but it's, like, you know, tied into the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a hot spot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I think that's all the news stories I could find as of somewhat recently. If I kind of want to do this every couple of weeks or so and just tackle some of the latest headlines type of stuff. So people, if they want to send along stories they think we should talk about, put them in the group on Facebook for Where Did the Road Go? Or you can email them to me, but the group, that way everyone can take a look right there and then. And it's easy enough to find on Facebook. I do want to read this old story, though. This, I'm part of the Magonia Exchange on Yahoo Groups, and they post all these old newspaper articles. And this one comes from April 16th, 1897. And this one stuck out to me because it says, occupants of the aerial craft drop a swordfish in the lake and sail away. If Davis of Detroit's, it's hard to read. Nope, that's not. Davis of Detroit says that while out on his fish tug, the Sea Wing, yesterday, the fisherman noticed a queer-looking boat not far away. Captain Joseph Singler, master of the tug, and Mr. Davis agrees that it appeared to be about 40 feet in length. It had a cabin covering about one-fourth of the deck surface. A man dressed in a checked, it's the actual copy from the newspaper, so some of it's faded. Checked nutting suit, I think is what it says, or nunting suit, and wearing a long peaked cap, was fishing from the boat. He was apparently about 25 years of age. A handsome woman sat at his side with a boy of 10 at her feet. As the Sea Wing neared the curious craft, a gaily decorated object was slowly inflated and rose to the length of the ropes by which it was attached to the boat. It was a balloon, cylindrical shaped, about 50 feet long. Slowly, the boat rose into the air until it stood directly above the tug, about 500 feet from the water. It circled like a hawk for several minutes. Suddenly, there was a splash in the water, and a large swordfish had been dropped from the airship. The fish was stunned and is now on exhibition in a tank at the fire tug, Cleveland, Ohio. A sail was dropped from the airship, and the mysterious people were carried away by the high wind. Mr. Davis said the boat had a wheel similar to those on steamers. This, it is stated, acts as a propeller in the air as well as on the water.
Huh.
So that's a sufficiently weird story.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot.
Around the world in 80 days, kind of weird. Like, I don't know what.
Yeah, Melissa makes, were they dropping the swordfish so they could have more ballast or like so they could take off or what?
Or maybe it's not even that logical. Maybe yeah. The whole thing was just an exercise in unlogic.
But I mean, in like this is 1897. I mean,
yeah.
I guess you could make something up for notoriety, but do you think honestly he would have made that up thinking, yeah, I'll get famous and rich in 1897? Like I don't know.
and they did say the swordfish was on display, so
yeah, they got the swordfish. That's pretty wild. I wonder if someone still has that somewhere.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I mean, unless he wanted to develop a really elaborate story around the swordfish to get some attention, I don't know.
Oddly enough, one of the responses in the group was, I wonder if that where that fish is today.
Yeah, well, there was a story in my last Bigfoot book, in Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. In the back, I just threw some other stories that weren't Bigfoot related.
Yeah,
one of them was about a large alligator that had been living in the Susquehanna. Now, it gets very cold in Pennsylvania. And the best they could tell was that this alligator had survived 2 years, so through two winters. And it was apparently coming up out of the Susquehanna and grabbing people's sheep and dragging them into the Susquehanna and so forth. They finally killed it. And they said a guy came down, I think from Cornell, from one of the colleges who was really into taxidermy. And gave him $50 or something for it, and said it was. He was really surprised. A at the size, it was quite large. It wasn't like a the biggest one I've ever seen or anything, but it was quite large. And mostly that it had been taken out of the Susquehanna, and he took it back, and they said he had it stuffed, and it was at that university. And I really thought, like, I'd really like to go see that. Like someone somewhere probably still has that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's actually a more recent similar story, down in Alabama where I'm from, in the mountains there was an alligator that had somehow gotten into one of the reservoirs and had been living there and, kind of scaring people and stuff for a while. And they eventually just took it out and killed it. And I mean, Alabama's pretty far south, but I mean, it does get freezing in the winter there. So it's just odd how it survived so long.
And someone pointed out that swordfish don't live in lakes either. So it's not like it was something that was already there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I think on that weird story, we shall conclude. Let's go around. Ren, where can people find you?
I write a blog at liminalroom.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Mr. M-I-S-T-E-R _ Apol, A-P-O-L.
All right, Tim?
Strangefamiliars.com.
Okay. And Melissa, you have something new you're working on.
Yeah, I'm got a new site going up. It's called, the URL is scarletart.rocks, and that's scarlet with two T's. So it's scarletart.rocks. And I'm on Facebook as Melissa Martell and Scarlet Art, 7. So go like my page and check out my site. And it's a little bit under construction, but it's pretty readable. It's, it's okay to go there. It's not too bad yet. It's all brand new.
Okay. And what was the extension on it? Rocks, R-O-C-K-S?
Yep. That's it.
Huh. I didn't know that was an extension.
Neither did I. I just discovered this about a week and a half ago.
Huh. All right, then. Yeah. Well, I thank you all. It's been a good conversation.
Always good to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. So, again, I hope you enjoyed this. I plan on doing these somewhat regularly, especially if you guys can throw us some stories. You can find links to almost everything we talked about at the Where Did the Road Go Facebook group, the group, not the page. So go join the group. And if you have stories you think we should cover, put them in there. All right. And we started out talking about how it was Black Friday and the whole Christmas mess and stuff. So I have the most appropriate Christmas song. This is Devo Spice, who I've previously played his Nothing But Truth song. He's a comedy rap artist from New Jersey. He's an awesome guy. And this is the Christmas season. Enjoy.
Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Ah, Christmas is coming, ah, Christmas is coming.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas already, with the animated reindeer in the top hat wearing Yeti. Now I can be as festive as the next guy, but I still have firecrackers from the 4th of July. Come on, do I really need 6 months to shop? Might as well be Christmas nonstop. Pretty soon they'll be hanging up lights all over town, and it was just last week I finally took mine down. Please can I get a break for my sake? All I'm asking for is 1 month without a fruitcake. Give me some time to recover from another year of drunken relatives and a pissed off little brother. Singing that stupid Jingle Bell song in the middle of July somehow seems wrong. I still got 5 months to go, and I'm already sick of the ho ho ho.
It's Christmas time again.
Let's see what's on TV.
It's Christmas time again.
Well, we got Rudolph, Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
Rudolph versus Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
A CSI Christmas.
The Christmas season causes great frustration, getting longer and harder like a Viagra patient. I just need a vacation from the holiday cheer. I don't think that I can take it for the rest of the year. And nobody is cheerful anyway. It's always give me the damn toys and get the fuck out my way. I can deal with that on December 23rd, but when it starts up in March, that's a little absurd. And then the charities, there's way too many begging me for money like I have any. And there's some idiot flapping his mouth like a flapjack with his peace on earth and all that crap. I'd settle for peace in the kitchen, but that would mean my relatives would have to quit their bitching. And since I doubt that'll ever come about, it's Merry Christmas, pass the gravy, and I try to tune them out.
It's Christmas time again.
Alright, let's see what Santa brought for me.
It's Christmas time again.
Huh, I already have one of these.
It's Christmas time again.
Hey, wait a minute, this is mine.
It's Christmas time again.
I've been looking for this.
Christmas usually consists of this: fighting back the urge to shop with my fist, sending out cards to people I never see, and trying to keep the dog from peeing on the tree. And then the whole family has to search for directions so we can find our way to church. I still find it ironic and a little bit odd that my kids believe in Santa Claus but not in God. But I ain't taking my kids, cause it's too weird to see some child molester in a fake beard. I don't care if they kick and scream, I ain't doing anything till after Halloween. I can only buy damaged and discount due to the amount in my bank account. But I have no motivation to shop when I know I'm still paying off gifts from 3 Christmases ago.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
What do you mean again? More like still.